Hey, what's up, everybody? Justin Ochoa back with another episode of the Gym Sessions Podcast. Today, I've got my guy Tony Hicks on the show. Tony is currently playing in Hungary. He is a former UPenn Quaker, former Louisville Cardinal, and a seven-year pro. We talk about his career, the ups and downs, talk about his upbringing and development, growing up in Chicago, being a two-sport athlete, and ultimately what led him to choosing basketball, talk college career, pro career, getting a little bit of X's and O's of basketball. And this is a great conversation, great basketball conversation with a great dude. Tony is one of my favorite guys that I've ever worked with. Just consistent, like consistently brings that A-plus work ethic to every single workout, does not miss workouts, stays on a consistent schedule, great communicator, great worker, great environment, culture guy, like love Tony and what he brings to our program. And so it's great for me to catch up with him, obviously, but also introduce my audience to him. So again, this is season 2, episode 8 with Tony Hicks. Hopefully you guys enjoy. Tony, what's up, man? Welcome to the show. Thank you for staying up late on a weekend. Yeah. To join me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, it's all good. Thanks for having me. You know, anything for the GOAT. So
my God.
It's light work. God.
Dude, it's crazy. Like the time just trying to get like overseas guys and overseas women on the show. It's like I'm already struggling with the time zones. But then today was daylight savings. So we had to do some extra math. But yeah.
And for us, it was last week.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
So you guys
We've really been seven hours. Yeah.
Damn, that's trippy.
So we've really been 7 hours for this past week, and now it's back to 6.
That's trippy. That's
yeah.
I'm very surprised I didn't fuck this up schedule wise.
I didn't even know that it was last week because like on my phone everything's like still American, and so it was one night I'm looking at the clock and I'm like. I look at my phone and I look at the stove and I'm like, it's no way it's 10 o'clock. Like, I text the group. They're like, yeah, it's daylight savings. It's daylight savings. I'm like, all right, babe.
That's what's up, man. Well, why don't you just fill us in, fill the listeners in. Obviously, I know where you're at, but like where you're at, who you're playing for, what league you're in right now, and kind of where you're at this point in the season.
Yeah. So right now we are 6 games in. I'm in Hungary. I'm playing for Zalaegerszeg. It's kind of a small city, like I would say southwest Hungary. I'm about like two and a half hour drive from Budapest, like 2.5 hour drive from Vienna. We doing pretty well. I feel like I've been here for like 5 months with preseason and everything. You know, we've been having so many practices and stuff, but things starting to like really cool off. We 4-2 now. We lost our first 2. Gave away the first game, really get like literally when you say give away a game, I don't think it could get no more like here, take this win. That hurts because really we would be tied for second place. But right now we tied for third with a couple other teams. So we've been getting guys healthy and we kind of getting our swing for real. So I'm excited.
No, that's what's up, man. So you've had some stops along the way. We'll cover your journey, but just like professionally, you've played in the UK, you played in Germany, you played in the Czech Republic, now Hungary. What's been the biggest difference so far, even though it's early from this league and some of the previous leagues and stops that you've
played? Yeah, this is definitely the best league that I've played in so far. I would just say that the biggest difference is it's very physical. Sometimes I don't know if we're playing football or not, you know. I'm okay with it because the refs are a bit consistent. Like, you know, as a player, you always just want them to be consistent. Like, whether you might feel like it's consistently bad or good, but not changing, like, how you reffing the game throughout the game. So, I appreciate that, but I'm a vet now, really. So, that don't really, like, faze me too much. I kind of just take it for what it is, but I would say that the physicality, I played in countries where I felt like the domestic players were just as good, but I would say that the imports in this league for sure are like a lot better than anywhere I played.
That's what's up. So you said you don't know if you're playing basketball or football. So that's perfect segue.
Sometimes, man.
Perfect segue into, you know, throwing it back to Young Tone, growing up in Chicago, multi-sport athlete. They don't know he was a big-time quarterback. Talk about just your development story. Like, what got you into sports? How did you start to develop as a hooper and a football player? And then ultimately, like, where did that divide start to happen where you start to feel like you, like, hoops was the thing for you?
Yeah. Well, sports was really just, like, for my brother. You know, he was really, like, my role model growing up. He's 10 years older than me, so as I was a kid, he was right in the cusp of, like, being a teenager in high school and stuff. So I was with him every day after school, watching him practice and all of that. So once I got of age to play football, that's what I wanted to do because he was really a football and track athlete. I just fell in love with the game, to be honest. Luckily, my mom, she did, like, Donovan McNabb's mom's hair, who's from Chicago. So we had that connection. Also, I would, like, go to Bears-Eagles games and stuff like that. Sometimes I get to go in the locker room. So it was just something that, like, it was my dream, like, growing up, being an NFL quarterback. This was my whole life, you know what I'm saying? I played basketball, like, with my friends, but I never, like, really cared for basketball. I was never, like, I didn't really even start watching basketball. I would say until, like, 2001, like AI, Kobe, like around that time. Other than that, I wasn't even watching basketball. I didn't care at all.
That's crazy. Now that's surprising though, because like you're like a high IQ basketball player. Like you obviously like you're a pro, but you know, there's some pros that still don't read the game as well as you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you think maybe your time as a quarterback like carried over to that and you being a point guard that's floor general?
For sure. I mean, like, it absolutely did, but I also think that I really think that it's good for kids to like play multiple sports for this reason. I feel like because I started playing basketball late, like my obsession and like real like love for basketball is kind of like at the peak right now. Where I know as like guys who've been playing since they was like 3, 4, 5 years old, like every day at a serious level, might be a little burnt out mentally. Whereas like I'm still like at the like peak love, like you know what I mean. Like I know for a fact I want to coach all of that, like X's and O's, and personalities as well. Because I didn't play point guard until I got to Louisville. I was never a point guard. Yeah, I was never a point guard, and so also like I had to change a lot about myself. Like from being a two guard to a point guard is a completely different shift. Like your demeanor, how you got to walk in the gym, how you got to talk to your teammates, all of that. So that was something I really didn't learn until I became a pro and had some conversations with one of my coaches, like my rookie year, but he kind of broke that down to me. And that was something that I really like, I had to understand. And that kind of brought me back more so to like, my quarterback personality, I would say, as opposed to just being out there trying to just see in the rim and nobody else, having the horse blinders on.
Yeah. So, like, when did you, I guess, specialize in basketball? When you made the decision for college, essentially? You played all the way through high school?
Okay. So, the first time I really started playing basketball was, like, I was still a football player all the way up until my sophomore year of high school. But I first started playing on teams really in seventh grade. And that was when I transferred into middle school with Rello, some of the guys that you know now from Chicago. And I was really just doing that because all my boys was doing it. You know what I'm saying? We was always the cool kids at school. Everybody wanted to hoop like before school. Yeah. Before we had to stand in line, we was hooping outside and stuff like that. So it was just something that I did. You know what I'm saying? It helped me stay in shape a little bit in the wintertime. So it was cool. But I didn't really take it too serious. The real split started going into my sophomore year. It's when I had needed a knee surgery small surgery, just a little scope, but it happened in the summertime, so I ended up missing football, but I was back for basketball. And we had just got a new coach. Mind you, this high school that I went to historically is a football school. Chicago Catholic League, St. Rita. If you know anything about, like, Chicago Catholic League, it's pretty much St. Rita, Mount Carmel. Plenty NFL players from both schools. Like, these are football powerhouses in Chicago. And so that's the school that I chose to go to for football. Again, I played basketball just because, like, it was cool. It was a winter sport.
Yeah.
But once that time came, we had this new coach who was from New York, who coached plenty All-Americans, plenty, like, high school All-Americans, D1 players. He's pretty much a legend in New York. Ran an ABCD camp with Sonny Vaccaro. So this guy's like legit, coached at DePaul and ended up coming back to high school in Chicago. So he kind of told me that I would be playing varsity my sophomore year. Cause you know, normally it's like junior, senior year, unless you are just like a standout. And mm-hmm. I was really just doing it just cause, you know,
yeah.
But I had a really good sophomore year. The attention that you get, it's probably a little different from football to basketball, not having helmets on and stuff like that. And then, you know, after basketball season, it kind of go right into like AAU. You don't really start right. doing in high school. You don't really start doing anything for football until the summertime, unless you live like down south. So that summer, I really just fell in love with the game, to be honest. He kind of told me, you know, I think this is something, if you like took it serious, you for sure can get a scholarship. And coming to high school, that was my main thing. Obviously, I wanted to go to the NFL and play quarterback my whole life. But for me, it was one step at a time, like getting to college, being able to get a scholarship to college. So as things went on and progressed, I kind of just fell in love with basketball more and more and fell out of love with football. I'm not going to say I fell out of love with it, but it just didn't matter as much to me.
Yeah. Man. So growing up, like, what is the process in terms of, like, high schools in Chicago? Is it mm-hmm. kind of just, like, open rein? And then if it is, like, obviously you went to a middle school in your neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And then St. Rita obviously is not geographically making sense to that feeder program. Do you just, like, hop on a train? Like, what's the process like for a teenager in Chicago traveling through the city, basically, you know, becoming a young man, like, at such an early age, like, doing all that stuff? What does that look like?
Yeah. So So basically I live, like, right outside the city limits, I guess, for the Indianimals, that might be, like, Lawrence, for example. You have to go to high school in a district, you know, where you live. Obviously, like, sometimes people might use addresses or whatever the case may be, but if you go to a Catholic or a private school, you can live wherever. So we actually had, I had teammates, our baseball team was really good also, but I had, like, classmates who played baseball who lived in Indiana, in, like, Munster or Cherville or something like that.
Crazy.
Yeah, so they would just travel however they had to. Me personally, my mom, I would wake up at about, I had to catch a 6:50 bus. So I was waking up at like 5:30, you know what I'm saying? Getting ready for school. I would leave the house at about 6:30. My mom would take me to public transportation, bus stop over in Harvey, which is like super trenched out, this area, if you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. So I saw a lot of stuff on this bus. But yeah, it would actually drop me off right across the street from the high school. So it was perfect. And then I would just do the same thing coming home for those first 2 years.
Man, that's pretty wild. Like, just thinking about how different that is from, you know, like, the bus systems here. We don't have, like, Indy doesn't have that public transportation like Chicago.
It's called the TARC, right?
I don't even know, bro. I don't use it. It's crazy. Like, it's like in metro cities like New York, Chicago, like, places like that, like, it's like part of the locals' everyday life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not an inconvenience here. Like, it's just not part of the lifestyle. You know, like, I remember I went to New York to see my best friend a couple summers ago, or no, actually no, it was a couple falls ago. And I'm walking through Lower East Side Manhattan, and I'm seeing like kids, my kids' age at the time, which would have been like 4 and 6, getting off the subway, like themselves. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like
that's wild.
Just like navigating that trip to school and home by themselves. So like I always wonder, you know, same thing with Chicago, like what is it, the red line or whatever, like
system. They got the colors for the train system. Yeah.
That's just crazy. Like me as a teenager, like my brain, I'm not figuring that out. You know? I just would have got lost.
I feel you. Luckily, I only had to. Luckily, it was like one bus. Like it was.
Yeah.
Like where I got on was the first stop, and where I got off was the last stop. You know what I mean? Because technically, the bus that I took wasn't like CTA. It was a Pace bus, but it went into Chicago. Pace is kind of like the outside surrounding neighborhoods of Chicago. But it went into the city, and it dropped me off right at the school. So I really just had to walk across the street. And like I said, we had kids coming from all over the place coming to our school. So we had like a ton of security. Like it's not a great area where Santa Rita is, especially that bus stop and that McDonald's, right? Like it get a little treacherous, I'm telling you. But we had tons of security, and so everything was safe. I saw some crazy stuff on that bus, but nothing ever like too crazy that spooked me out. Yeah. Just had to grow up a little bit and like keep my head down a little bit sometimes for sure.
Yeah, just had to grow up fast, man. I used to take the mega bus up to Chicago. It was like I think like
that take you 10, right downtown.
Yeah, take 10, yeah. 10, 15 bucks. Drive you up there, man. I used to see some shit on that bus, too. It was crazy.
I'm already knowing. So and right where it let you off, too.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
saw a lot right there, too.
You get off and you're like, man, let me hurry up and get where I need to be before it gets too risky out here.
Yeah, you hope your ride is ready or that Uber is waiting for you.
Facts. Shit, this is before Uber days. That was a long time ago. Well, I'm aging myself now.
Yeah, man. Don't even get me started.
But all right, so we talking about, you know, just making that leap, you know, kind of taking the leap of faith into basketball, and obviously it pays off. Get a full ride, end up at Penn, right?
Yes, sir.
And do 4 years there, kill it. And what led you to Louisville? Like, how did that come about for that last year?
Yeah, this is a crazy story, man. And I feel like now it's probably a little more common, but I was right at the cusp of like when the whole grad transfer thing started to pop off, really. So obviously you make a college decision. It's about the school, of course. I went to Ivy League school, so like, of course, that was part of the decision. But you go for the coach, you know, who you going to play for. That's what really matters. Penn was the first school to offer me, and they were just like, at every event, like throughout the summer, they were everywhere. Like they made sure that they didn't miss anything. So to me, that was just a testament to like their loyalty and like they want for me. So it was something that I felt that I needed to repay. So I go to Penn. I have a great 3 years. They fire my coach going into my senior year. No, I had no intentions on like transferring or anything. I'm gonna be a senior, so I might as well finish this out. Mm-hmm. We hire Steve Donahue, who's a pretty well known coach in college basketball as well. Coached at Boston College for a lot of years. Coached Reggie Jackson. Coached at Cornell for a bit, so he's been around and he's well known college coach. He's a good coach. So everything is fine. Pretty much all the way up until like right before the season. And I'm not going to say that anything like went bad or the situation switched up, but he had pretty much a philosophy of how he wanted to play basketball. And I'm not going to say that I couldn't fit that philosophy, but at times just being the player that I was and had been for the past 3 years, if something was going astray on the court, I would kind of, you know, get in my bag a little bit or try to make my imprint on the game as I normally would. And we had a red and white scrimmage. That situation kind of happened. And then the next week we had a scrimmage against another university. And they called me into the office. Coach called me into the office on that Tuesday and kind of just let me know, like, you've been great. Everything has been great. We have been having NBA scouts come to our practices and everything for me and another teammate. So everything was fine. And he told me that, but he also stated that if he didn't know that he could allow me to play how I've been playing, because he's trying to implement a new system. Mm-hmm. And he kind of told me that if I can't adapt, which I don't think that I couldn't have, maybe I couldn't have in hindsight, but I feel like I had adapted pretty well. He didn't know like what my role on the team would be. And to me, that was kind of, I don't want to say a slap in the face, but it was really unexpected being like this close to the season. And the reason that he was mentioning this to me is because he knew that I had a future in basketball. And he kind of brought the whole situation up about transferring. So to me, I'm completely taken aback. And if a coach is going to tell you that in the meeting, I'm kind of already checked out. Like, all right, well, yeah. I'm for sure out of here if you're going to bring this to my attention. In hindsight, like I said, I'm glad that he did, because he could have just not used me, kept me there. Yeah, and just buried me and kept me there. And so as I'm leaving this meeting, you know, I kind of tell my teammates what's going on. Obviously, they're in shock. I reach out to my high school coach. I reach out to a couple people that I have been training with, like, throughout the summers, and just people that I trusted. And a lot of them told me, like, yeah, this sucks, but this probably could be one of the better things to happen to you as far as, like, your career, because you're for sure going to be probably one of the top transfers in the nation, like being a grad transfer. Yeah, so this happened like right before the season. So I just finished out my senior year, you know, everything. And I really didn't start getting recruited maybe until like late November, early December. And so I'm able to go home because I'm not playing basketball. So this is the first time I'm going home for winter break and everything. Really just being a student, it was very different. But I still got to use the facilities, got to work out and stuff in the gym. So it was all good. It was all love there. But really the first few teams that were on me was Oregon. Like, to be honest, I went home during winter break, like, telling people, like, that's probably where I'm going. Like, that's what it's looking like. They came to come visit me in Chicago while I was at home. Everything was great. We went out to eat. I had a official visit set up early January. And this is when Oregon is pretty good. This is the year before, obviously, my year when I played at Louisville, they went to the Final Four. So the year before, they were really good as well. And then I get a call from Damian Lee. I mean, some people maybe know of him. He's played with the Warriors, played for the Suns, but he went to Drexel before he transferred to Louisville, which is next door neighbors to UPenn. So I had known him for a while. We had a good relationship. He told me that coach would be calling me pretty soon, blah, blah, blah. My high school coach and Coach Patino have a great relationship as well, both being from New York. So it kind of fit. So they called me that evening. I spoke to them. They were like, maybe you want to come down for unofficial since it's a 4-hour drive. You know what I mean? I'm home for the holidays. So I was like, sure, I'll come down. I went down there, checked it out. Obviously, this is big time. You know, I'm going from Palestro, which is a pretty historic gym that we played in, somewhat like Hinkle, but KFC Yum Center is 22,000. Fans are knowing who I am. I'm walking in the gym. They're telling me to come, you know, so it's a bit of eye opener of what like high level college basketball is, because I played mid-major, you know, mid to low major in the Ivy League. So it's a big difference. And I'm really, really recognizing like, okay, this is what it's going to be. Now, here's the kicker. On the drive back to Chicago from Louisville, Oregon calls me. I might be driving back on a Sunday, and I'm supposed to be going to visit Oregon, the official visit, on a Tuesday. And this is a big game, ESPN game. They're playing Cal. This is when Cal has Ivan Rabb, Jaylen Brown. It's like a huge game, so I'm excited. So they call me. They're like, maybe it might be best if we reschedule the visit. The weather here is getting kind of murky. I guess in the Pacific Northwest, it doesn't really get too cold. So if it does, like the airways might be a little backed up, might get a little sleety on the landing strips and so forth. So they kind of tried to reschedule. And I just thought it was a little weird, especially like as I'm driving back from Louisville, where I just had a great time, a great visit. And so, yeah, I wouldn't say that was the deciding factor, but that kind of really shifted my opinion about what was going on. And, you know, so I went home, spoke to my high school coach, and he was just like, I was of the impression that going to Oregon, I knew I was going to be a starter. Coming in, they had Peyton Pritchard signed, who would have been a freshman that year, but I was going to be a senior. So they kind of already told me that the job would be mine. And Louisville is not that type of situation at all, dealing with Coach Pitino. You're kind of going to. For example, if a kid asks him, like, am I going to start? What are my minutes going to be like? He might not even want to offer you a scholarship anymore, for example. So, and that was fine. I knew that there were minutes for me on the team, you know. Like I said, they had just had Damian Lee and Trey Lewis come in that year, who were grad transfers, who were doing their thing. So whether I started or not wasn't an issue for me. I knew that there were minutes for me and I could play well. And this is probably a bigger stage. A bigger connection to the ultimate goal, playing for Coach P. So it was kind of the decision I made as well, on top of they had a lot of sanctions and stuff going on at the time, so people weren't committing to him. So I felt that he might appreciate that more, even a little more, you know. So that was the decision that I ended up making. So, yeah, I finished out my senior year, and I head down to Louisville early June.
And you guys had a squad. Let's talk about that.
We
squad.
Did.
Obviously, we did. Probably, you know, the big name that pops out is Donovan Mitchell,
yeah.
Who I just got the chance to see play in person for the first time. I went to the Pacers-Cavs game. And
what'd you think?
He's different. Like, very,
yeah,
very explosive. He moves. He's kind of a little bow-legged, maybe. I don't know. He just has a wide base on everything he does. But it
makes he wears a size 17 shoe.
That's insane. It's like he's just so powerful. Like he looks powerful. He makes other people who I know to be powerful look less powerful when he's exploding, you know, to the rim or on a drive or whatever. So. It was cool to see him play. Like that was definitely one of the most, like, I mean, I've seen some freak athletes. Like he's up there in terms of just like raw capabilities. I'd love to see him in the weight room. Like, see what he can do.
Man, it's crazy that you say that, because obviously I don't know like what he's doing in the weight room now. But when we were at school, like, He wasn't like lifting like lots of weights. He wasn't pushing weight like that. Like,
yeah,
you would be surprised. Like, I just think that he's a gamer. Like, his in game strength and like his base, like you said, it's so elite that, and he has weight on him. So I just think that that's kind of what carries him. Like I said, I don't know what he's doing in the weight room now, but he wasn't one of the stronger guards that we had. To me, which was like extremely surprising, because he was the same way then as he is he plays now. So I was like really surprised about that. So
he might be one of those guys that is just basketball strong and has some natural God-gifted ability to
him, sure.
That, you know, the weights that he does do, I would imagine now he's probably not doing anything crazy. Probably a similar variation of the type of stuff we do, but like, just that little bit of external load with his genetics probably make the results go crazy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So who were some of the other teammates that you had during that time? And then what was that year like for you? Like playing for Louisville, playing for Patino, you know, who yeah. in my eyes is like, you know, obviously he's been in a little bit of trouble here and there, but like yeah. first ballot Hall of Famer in for terms sure. of basketball coaching, you know, hands yeah. down.
Hey guys, taking a quick break from the show to give a special shout out and a thank you to the sponsor of today's episode, which is Vitruv. Now, if you've ever been in my gym, you train with me, or you visited the gym, you see this attached to every single bar. Vitruv is the gold standard for VBT units, in my opinion. Accurate, reliable data. We're attaching it to every single lift that we do. We're getting bar speed metrics, power, force, range of motion. We're able to consolidate all that data, manage it, and then help our athletes get the most precise results possible. So again, Vitruv, second to none. I stand by it. They are a friend of the show, so they're letting you guys get 10% off of your orders by using the code GEMS, that's G-E-M-S, at vitruv.fit. That's their website. I would encourage you to get on there, look at the products, look at the research that goes into their products, look at their product education. And if you like what you see, tap in, right? If you had any questions, tap in with me. I've been using Vitruv for years now, so I'm very well versed on how to implement this into a program. Again, 10% off with the code GEMS. And in my opinion, best VBT unit on the market from reliability, accuracy, customer support is A1. Their education on their product is A1. I cannot recommend them enough. Vitruv.fit, 10% off, code GEMS. Now back to the show.
Yeah, so play with tons of pros. Like all of these guys are have played pro, whether that be in the NBA or high level Europe. Quinn Snyder, who I know a lot of people in the Midwest know about. Ray Spalding, who had some injuries but had kind of found his way in the league. He was playing for Houston really well. Jalen Johnson, Mango Mathiang, Dan Gadel, who had a couple games in the league, had a little stint in the league. I know Ryan McMahon, who everybody knows. He didn't play a lot because he was younger those years, but one of the best shooters that I've ever seen in my life. Honest Mahmoud. We were kind of loaded, like you said. We had a lot of talent on our team. Overall, the experience was great. Like in hindsight, when I really think about it, going through it, it was one of the tougher times of my life, and one of like the more like eye-opening situations in my life. I learned so much more about life than I did basketball, and that also helped me just become a better person, but also a better basketball player. So like obviously coming to Louisville, like I said, I was probably one of the top transfers in the country. Like I had Oregon, I was considering going to Miami. I was considering going to Nevada, who had Coach Musselman at the time, who's the coach of Arkansas mm-hmm. now. I was considering Boston College. Like I had a lot of high.
Yeah, that would have been funny seeing you play for him. I don't know why, just seeing what he does Musselman? Now. Yeah, like just all his antics. Like theatrical antics. Like yeah. I would love to see you in that setting for sure.
Yeah, he's got some antics. He definitely does. And that would have been I would have been playing with the Martin twins at Nevada at this time. Yeah. So saying that to say, I'm going into Louisville expecting to be a key contributor, whether that's starting, whether that's off the bench, doesn't matter. That did not happen, and I just learned a lot. It wasn't that I wasn't good enough, because you could ask any of my teammates. We will have numerous conversations about whether it be during the game on the bench or like after the game in hotel rooms about like, why is he not playing you? You need to be on the court. Like, we need you. But I just had to take it for what it was. And it wasn't that I never played. I probably played like 7 minutes a game. Average maybe four points a game. But any time that I played over 20 minutes, I was highly contributing, like double digits, few mm-hmm. assists, few rebounds, steals. So It was just tough. My minutes would go. I'm just gonna give you an example of how my minutes would go. 15 minutes, 2 minutes, 2 minutes, 25 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, 0 minutes, dude. 0 minutes, 7 minutes, 12 minutes. So yeah, story as a player mentally, right yeah. So mentally as life. A player, that's really tough. And it kind of got to a point where it was just like, you know, like this is my last chance at the collegiate level. I just got to be ready at any point, because if I'm ready or if I'm not ready, that's going to be an excuse or a reason for him to not play me. Because so I have to be ready at all times. So just take practice as serious as you can, because you never know what's going to happen, what you're going to be stepping into. So, and the coaches, assistant coaches did a really good job of like keeping me calm. Letting me know, like, we're going to need you in big games. And in big games, some of the bigger games, I was needed. And those were some of the games where I played a lot more of my minutes. Whether that be guys in foul trouble or guys just not playing well and just being ready for when your name is called. So, yeah, that was a really tough year. And lot, like, I'm not gonna lie, as a person and as a basketball player, but I learned more just about myself, about people, about how to approach life and all of that. So I'm forever grateful for it. Obviously I go down to Louisville all the time. As you know, I have a daughter there, but I can still go on campus. It's all love with all of my former teammates. It's new coaching staff, but I know all of those guys as well. It's all love. It's L1C4, I'm for sure a Cardinal, as well as UPenn, Quaker, Ivy League graduate. So I'm forever grateful. Man, yeah, just try to take all of those experiences with me to the next level.
Yeah, that's dope, man. I mean, we've talked about this, obviously, in the gym, you know, just being from the area you're from, getting a chance to go get an Ivy League education and then go play for one of the top coaches of all time. Obviously, I know how grateful you are, how serious you take it.
Granted, not to cut you off, he's probably the best coach that I've ever played for in my life, and it's super evident. The way that he talks to players, the way that he motivates us, his X's and O's, the way that he just runs the program, the way that he runs practices, all of this is top tier, and if for anybody that's saying otherwise, they just a hater, because you can't walk in the gym and be like, nah, I don't like how he's doing this or whatever the case may be. He's the best coach that I've ever played for, hands down.
Do you think that he will ever go back to the NBA at any capacity? Or maybe is that not the best place for him?
In 2023, I don't think that's the best place for him. And I don't think that he would want to do that. No. Yeah, just how the league is. I think that he would prefer to go coach EuroLeague like he did that 1 year, 1 or 2 years, than to probably coach in the NBA. Yeah. Not that he can, but it's just a different era.
Yeah, I feel like he's definitely, like you said, like a shaper of young men and more off the court stuff. Like, I feel like he's needed more at the college level, especially now with the way that the college landscape is. But no, I was going to say, man, like you've obviously had quite a story. You know what I mean? Like, we've talked about this plenty of times. When did it like click for you? Like, I'm about to be a pro. Like, I got to get ready for my pro basketball career. Even being that like the last year of your college career, like, didn't go as planned. I know that you still had pro aspirations, and obviously when you come from a school like that, you have pro, you know, scouts and eyeballs on you throughout the year. When did it click for you? You know, obviously you grew up saying, I want to play quarterback in the NFL. Like, now you're a point guard in overseas, you know, top league. Like, where was that decision made, and how was that first preparation summer for your pro career?
Well, I want to like take it back a little, because I knew that like I could play at a high level even from like my senior year of high school. Like, I went to Penn, but I was getting recruited by some high major schools also. I just committed very early. And had I waited, I kind of had an explosion my senior year. Mm. Had I waited, I probably would have been in like the Big Ten or something like that. I didn't, but my mindset all throughout college, all that pin was league. Like, this is all that's going on, like league. Like, and if I fall short, overseas will be there. Mm-hmm. So if you like talk to my teammates at Penn, like the standard that I held myself to, like how I worked out every day, it was the same as it is now. And to fast forward, it hit me going through that season at Louisville, because it was kind of like, this is not what I'm here for. And these were the conversations that I would have with some of my assistant coaches, and they were kind of just keeping me, you know, calm, like just keep thinking about the bigger picture. We're going to need you. You for sure are still going to have a career after this, because I had an amazing 3 years at Penn as well. So just trying to stay calm throughout that whole situation. But the day that we lost in the NCAA tournament, I knew like, all right, like, it's real now, because you already done graduated. You could leave Louisville right now and just start working out wherever you want. It's like, this is your situation. You figure out what you want to do. And pretty soon, some agents had started hitting me up. Shout out to Go Empire. That's who I signed with originally. Eddie and Cole McKeel. Cole was a manager at U of L when they won their national championship. So he obviously keeps an eye around the program and around like the Midwest as well. They're based out of Chicago as well. So they kind of knew me throughout the whole process, even before when I was at Penn. Mm. And yeah, it was tough, because going into your pro career as a rookie, you don't really know what to expect, especially if you don't have a lot of OGs to kind of tell you like what you should expect, where you might end up, what type of money you should be expecting, how living situations are going to be, XYZ. So it was a little tough. I signed late. It was late. It was kind of through a connection, kind of wasn't even through my agent. No knock on them, but sometimes that's how, just how you get jobs, through people that you know. And it just turned out to be a great situation for me. I started my career in the BBL. In England, and which isn't at the time wasn't a super respected league, and I knew that, and my agents knew that as well, and they kind of told me that you need to be going in here not necessarily thinking MVP, but that needs to be like where your mindset is, and winning basketball games as many as you can, and having that type of year. And I was able to do that. Won player of the month, back-to-back months in January, February. We had a historic season. I think the best season that the club had ever had. So things were looking up, you know, and I kind of made that jump. I kind of made a jump from what the normal progression from what the BBL to the next level would be. And now the BBL is much more respected. They got teams playing throughout Europe. There's a lot more money there now. So I would totally say that it's a great league for like a rookie to go to. But just knowing where you're at, sometimes you have to have a certain mindset about how you need to be productive and what you need to do on the court. So, yeah.
100%. So yeah. You had a – was it a broken foot, or you had broke your foot or something between your rookie season and your second year? Or I don't think I had met you yet at this point, but I remember you telling me about it. Like, what was that setback?
So this was from my second year to my third year. So my second year, I make that jump to Pro A Germany, which is one of the top second leagues in Europe. I would say behind France, Spain, Turkey, you know, it's one of the top second leagues. So again, lead the team in scoring, got good numbers. We're winning. This is the team's first year in this league. They just moved up from the third league. We're like second, third place the entire season. So we're having an excellent year, you know, overall. And from there, that summer, kind of was like, all right, you're about to kind of touch one of these top leagues. Mm-hmm. Because when you're so young and you keep making progress like that, it's much easier for you than if you're an older guy. Because you still got years. So I'm trying to make this leap. And everything is great. I have a great summer going into my third year. It's crazy just how life works, man. Like, I break my foot August, like right in the middle of August on a freak play. Earlier that day, I'm on the phone with my agent, and he's like, yeah, you should probably be signed by the end of this week. Like, everything's looking good. I'm talking to some great teams, you know what I'm saying? And we were looking at some pretty good leagues, such as possibly where I'm at now. You know, and this would be year three instead of year seven. So I break my foot. That's some real adversity, some real life adversity. Just dealing with that situation. Luckily, the club that I played for the year before had made a poor decision on who they signed as their point guard. And I was able to come almost right in as I was finished rehabbing, but I didn't really get to rehab. It was kind of like, it was had a Jones fracture, if anyone knows. So that's kind of like a 4 to 6 week until you can start like walking and running again. I was working out after 4 weeks, and I was probably in Germany week six. So it wasn't a ton of rehab, you know, as far as like ankle atrophy, calf atrophy, just not using the leg for a while. And I have a solid season, but the team is very different. Obviously, they're making changes, so they hadn't been winning at this time. Like I said, the team is very different as far as the imports. They're all new. So we did okay. You know, they made some more changes. It was a coaching change. And then we had a chance to probably get into the playoffs, but COVID, boom. Season's over. We go home in March, you know. And like I said, I had an okay season. Not as good as the year before. Definitely not as good as my rookie year. But I'm coming off an injury. I'm not entirely healthy, you know. No true rehab or anything like that. So summer's slow. Summer's slow for a lot of guys. Because this is the world shut down, you know. Really slow for a lot of guys. So I'm pretty much just waiting, playing a waiting game. Like I said, luckily my rookie year, I had a fantastic year. So I ended up having to go back to the BBL in the UK to the same team. I still talk to my former coach to this day. We got a great relationship.
I still use his Synergy account, so shout out to Coach.
Hey, shout out to Creon, you know. Go Scorchers. You know what I'm saying? So I go back. I have a pretty good year. The team isn't the same. We don't have, like, this historic year, but I still have a pretty good year. Like, I put up pretty much kind of the same numbers that I did my rookie year, but you know, if your team's not winning, you're not going to get as much individual accolades or notice that you would normally, obviously. But for the people that need to know, they know, you know, as far as like teams and GMs and agents and stuff, they know what's going on in situations such and forth. So finished that year. It's still kind of slow, just like in terms of COVID. And I'm also coming out of the BBL again. So I kind of, it's a setback when you look in terms of like level of competition, finances, all of this. And this is just from me breaking my foot and then having to step into a situation and then COVID. So obviously everyone had dealt with a lot of adversity around that time. And that was kind of mine. So again, things are slow. Slow in the summertime. I end up luckily going back to Pro A, Germany, Second League Germany, another team though. And this to me is like, this is the year that kind of shifts my trajectory. The team wasn't great, but the situation for me was great. I played really well. This for me, this was the first time where I really had a coach that instilled a lot of confidence in me to just play my game and not think, not be worried about shooting percentages, not be worried about. This is the first time I had a coach who actually told me to start shooting from further out, start shooting a three ball from further out. You know, you got longer arms. Maybe for you to get the full feel of your jump shot, you need to step out a little further. And for me, this is like, you know, you never hear anything like this from a coach, you know? So this is like exuding confidence in me. And just to hear that, you're going to play better, obviously, if you know that your head coach is telling you something like this. So I had a pretty good year. I think I maybe averaged like 17-6, which was a good year. You know, that's a great year in Europe anywhere. And again, this summer is kind of slow. You know, this following summer is kind of slow. And then by this time, I think before that summer, we had met for a little bit.
That was our first summer working together before that second trip
for a
to
little
Pro
bit.
A.
Yeah, for a little bit. And then the following summer was when we really started to lock in.
Yeah.
And obviously, like I've said, I feel like you've been instrumental to my career physically. You know, as I'm getting older, getting these grays in the beard and whatnot. What you do off the court is, to me, is just as important as, if not more important, especially in the summertime, as to what you do on the court. Especially if you're doing the right things. You know what I mean? Not just putting a lot of weight on your body and a lot of load. And like I said, I could feel the difference immediately working out with you because I'm still able to get in the gym, get my reps up. You know, I'm working out 1-2 times a day on the court, sometimes 3 maybe, but I'm also lifting weights with you 2-3 times a week. So for me to be able to do that and still maintain what I'm doing on the court, I think it's like invaluable. And like I said, it was still a little slow, you know. Sometimes you just got to make those agency changes. And this was something that like Rello and just people that I'm close to would kind of tell me, like, man, you got to do what's best for you. I know that you like a loyal guy and whatnot, but and there's no knock on whoever your agent might be, but you got to do what's best for you. And me personally, I think it's best for you to have an agent. Like now being a veteran, I think it's best for you to have an agent. If you're going to play in Europe, that's from Europe. Because if you have an American agent, unless they're like Rich Paul or something like that, they're going to be dealing with a middleman. And if they're dealing with a middleman, he's obviously going to tell his agents that he's close with in Europe or whoever he's close with in Europe, he's going to tell them about jobs first. And I just felt like things were going slow and it just wasn't making sense to me, you know. Not to like look left and right, but you know where you are as a player and you know like if guys are getting certain jobs at a certain level, like to me something just wasn't adding up. And that was when I actually had to go to Venezuela because at that time it was slow. So I went to Venezuela for a month.
I forgot all about that. That was fun to watch.
That was an experience, and like I said, that previous year was when I felt like I really started to take a shift, like in my confidence. And when I got to Venezuela, you could see that on full display. Yeah, like I was going bananas from range, doing pretty much whatever. And I think that was kind of. Knowing that, like, who was playing there, they had former NBA guys playing there. So it was pretty high level in terms of the imports and things like that. Knowing that I was doing that there, at this point, like, my confidence is pretty high, like, in terms of what I could do on the court. No matter who's on the court, I feel like I could probably be one of the better players on the court at any moment. And so, again, I come back. It's what, like, October maybe?
Yeah.
Still a little slow. I'm back in the gym with you. We labbing, you know, just trying to stay ready. And then I had to make that change because it was a little slow, you know. And I made the change. Ended up getting a little check from the check.
Hey, bars.
And it was up. It was up from then. It was up.
Yes, sir. Dude, I want to go back. I want to go back to a point that you made because I think this makes sense. like, to me, when your coach in, was it Pro A the second time that you said was rocking with you? So he's telling you to shoot from further. And, like, on your shot, like, I would consider you to have, like, a lower set point for, you know what I mean, compared to, like, a Clay who gets it here. You're more of, like, a Trae Young type set point.
Little shot put, maybe.
Yeah. But, which is fine. That's to me, that gives you range. Like, a lot of times, like, I don't have two different shots, but when I pull up for a midi, it's a high release point. When I'm pulling up from deep, like, I'm going to get a little bit more horizontal trajectory. That's a hard word to say. Yeah, instead of pushing up. So, like, you have that. You have a little bit of a lower set point. And I think for a coach to maybe he didn't recognize that. Maybe it's me in hindsight putting two and two together. But for a coach to know, like, all right, Tone got a little bit of a lower shot set point. Like, let's see if he can extend that range. And that will obviously open up way more shots with guys going under screen and rolls that are, like, further out where they think you might not be comfortable shooting from. Like, was that something that you know, maybe, like, thought about at the time? Or was there any changes to your shot prior to that? Like, if it wasn't falling for you? Or, you know, anything like that, because I think that's an interesting point.
Yeah, so to take it even further back, you know, like, in college, I was a two-guard, you know, a career 35% three-point shooter, and I was that guy. So I'm taking bad shots at the end of the shot clock, you know. True shooting percentage, I'm probably closer to 40, like 37, 38. I go to Louisville. I don't want to say they try to change my shot, but they try to change my shot a little bit. And I'm not playing. So it's also, like, on my mind a little bit as well. First year, pro, I shoot about 37%. Second year in Germany, where we're playing really well, this is the year, the takeoff year before I break my foot, I'm shooting 30%. Now, had I shot 35, 36 that year, I probably would have went straight to the Germany BBL. Because that's how well I was playing. But GMs, coaches, they look at a piece of paper sometimes, you know, and that's just that's just the business of it. So yeah, for him to say that, and then the following year, I kind of shot around the same thing. I kind of floated around 30. So for me to get there, and for him to say that, for sure, that's just giving me ultimate confidence. Like, all right, he not really caring about, like, he know my numbers, but he knows that I can shoot the ball. For him to be telling me to take a step back, of course, because, I mean, if you watch me play, you know, I'm downhill. It's difficult to kind of stay in front of me. And if guys are going over the screen, I'm kind of getting whatever I want because I can pass the ball as well. So if I got shooters, wherever the case may be, I'm playing one-on-one with a big, and, like, where else is the help coming from, you know? Yeah. Either I'm going to get to the rim or I'm going to kick it out for a shooter. So that's just the main thing because – if guys are going under the screen, yeah, you can kind of rescreen, and that's kind of the next step or whatever, but it kind of stifles the offense a little bit and can kind of make things a little stagnant, you know? So as much as you can, if you can shoot behind the screen, that's one of the more vital things to be able to do in basketball. Now I've been shooting the ball well past few years, so that's really what I feel like the biggest jump in my career has taken off, because things are just more open. The defense can't help. They can't sag so much, especially if I have shooters, you know. So it's kind of pick your poison about how you want to defend this ball screen, because, like I said, I pass the ball as well. So it's going to be really difficult. So, he definitely helped springboard all of that.
That's super dope, man. I did want to ask, like, I've been on Synergy a little bit watching your clips, but I haven't been able to watch a full game this year so far. What type of, you know, what's you guys' offense looking like? Like, type of actions mm-hmm. are you guys really getting into? Because I know different countries have different styles of play, and it may be very different from what you're coming from. So to kind of shed some light on that.
So, I mean, luckily, I've kind of always been in situations that offensively that kind of suit my game. I mean, which would be ideal for a player to go somewhere mm-hmm. where the coach knows your game and he wants to play that same style. So I played in the Czech last year. Me and my head coach now both were in the Czech last year. So he kind of already knew my play style and it suited what he wanted to do as well. Great coach. His team had been first place team normally in the Czech. So this was a step up for us both, and we really just trying to take advantage. But we run a lot of different motion. First thing first, we want to score fast. We want to play fast. I feel like the past few years, I've had a lot of trust from our coaches, kind of to just command the offense a bit. You know, I kind of can call my own sets throughout the game. I know, like, how we want to attack this team, you know, and I know how to pick my spots. I think that's one of the more important things for a point guard is, like, knowing how to pick your spots because, I mean, at the end of the day, everyone's running kind of the same stuff, whether it's dummy action into a pick and roll or it's we play off-ball sets where we got guys coming off staggers or whatever mm-hmm. the case may be. But for me personally, my actions are going to be either pick and roll or ISO. Like, so whether that be with a dummy action, whether that be a drag screen in early offense, it's kind of just me making the right reads. So, it's kind of been the same situation for me for the most part, just trying to play fast and just picking my spots. I think that, like I said, I think that's the most important thing for a point guard because at the end of the day, like, anybody on your team, any shot that you take, somebody on your team could have the opinion of that was a bad shot. We could have got something better. And that was really the big shift that I had to have mentally about, like, my demeanor, like, how I walk in the gym. And just being aware of that, like, I can't just be out there trying to get 30. Like, your team is not going to be good if your point guard is, like, genuinely trying to do that. If your point guard is taking 20 shots a game, you know what I mean? I'm playing 30 minutes, so there's plenty of time for me to and plenty of opportunity for me to get shots. It's going to be there. So I never really try to force anything. And that's just why I feel like I've been super efficient the past few years. And that's something that I really, like, try to lean on is just being as efficient as I can.
Yeah, 100%. I think we had talked about this at one point, but just kind of like the realization of when you shoot a shot, like, you're making an executive decision for the other four players. It's what I'm about to do is better than what y'all could do. So, like, it has to really be a good shot. Like, when you start getting shots up, you're like, you're basically saying, I believe in this, no matter how crazy it is, more than I believe.
Best decision.
Yeah. So, like, you got to kind of choose wisely.
Yeah. And that's something that you, like, you have to build trust with your teammates as well. Like, in practice, you got to show every day what you can do. You got to bring your best. And you also got to let them know as a point guard, like, I'm passing. I'm going to pass to the open man 10 times out of 10 if you're open. You know what I mean? Now, if there's, like, a situation, it's the last shot of the game and they're leaving you open because you've been – 0-for-10 tonight or something like that, you know, then you got to kind of make an executive decision. But 10 times out of 10, I'm going to pass to the open guy. Like, we're all pros. We can all put the ball in the basket at a high level. So that's what's going to be best for the team morale, for the offense, efficiency-wise, for everything. So that's just kind of where I keep my headspace at.
Yeah, man, I like that. So the last thing I want to do before I let you go is put you in the hot seat. Just a bunch of random questions, some of them about basketball, some of them about life. Kind of rapid fire questions. So,
Am I supposed to give like 1 to 2 word answers or can I give a little link?
It's up to you. You can put some context behind it. Some of them one word, whatever you're feeling. This is your show.
So, all right, sounds good.
We'll just start off, you know, coming from Chicago, a lot of hoopers, hoopers. Who are, if you're the point guard, right, you got to build your team with four other players that you either played with or against growing up in high school.
Okay. Oh, man, this is really tough. It's, like, super tough. Come on, J.O. This is crazy. All right, I'm at the one. I'm gonna go big. I'm gonna put Charles at the two. Charles Matthews, former UK, University of Michigan alum, my former high school teammate, who also played in the NBA, had some injuries though, but played in the league, touched the league. At the three, man, this is very difficult. I'm not going to lie. At the three, I'm going to go. I got to go with my boy Vic Law, another high school teammate, touched the league as well. Northwestern alum, played a little bit for the Lakers, played a little bit for the Magic. He's in China right now, or Japan, one of those countries right now, getting a bag.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Super bag. At the four, I gotta go Jabari Parker. At the five, like this is like I'm leaving out so many people, and if they watch this, I know that everybody's gonna be like, "What?" Like, you know what I'm saying? But I gotta show love to my high school teammates because they're at that level as well. At the five, I probably gotta go Cliff Alexander. Just a straight dog. I don't. Do you know Cliff?
I know
Kansas.
Him.
Kansas alum.
Yeah.
NBA player, former NBA player. You're overseas pro at the moment. Just straight dog. He's gonna clean the glass. He's gonna go get everything that I throw up. Any lob, he's gonna go get. Protecting the rim, doing everything. So I think that got to be a starting five, and that's a big lineup. Because Charles is 6'7".
That's some crazy people left off. Like, that's some crazy names left off.
I know.
You're going to be in trouble after this episode.
Actually, oh, man. I'm already tricked. Okay,
my bad. I got my...
I had to make the roster fit for me.
For you. Okay.
Yeah, I had to make the roster fit for me. You know I'm living off, like, AD. I didn't want to put D-Rose at the two.
Yeah,
and I've never played against or with D Rose, so like, but I play against and with Anthony Davis. I left off a lot of guys. K-9. I ain't gonna lie, but I left off a lot of guys. You know what I'm saying? I did for sure, but I wanted to go big. I wanted to go a big lineup because Charles is 6'7", Vic is 6'9", Jabari 6'9", and Cliff is like 7 foot. So that's big lineup.
I think of all people who are going to be the maddest at you, probably Rello going to be the most pissed off at you.
That I didn't put him on there?
He going to say, bro, you didn't pick me up. What the fuck?
That's crazy, too.
It's all good. Right. It's all right. Oh, man, that's fried. All right, so what's your favorite movie of all time?
I'm going to give you two. He Got Game.
Classic.
An American Gangster.
I like that. Two classics. Pre-game vibes. Pre-game vibes. What you listening to? You can go. Let's just go like three artists.
It varies. Okay, and I'm gonna show the versatility here.
Oh yeah. I already know it's there.
I'm gonna show the versatility. You know it's there. I'm gonna go Rod Wave. I'm gonna go V's, and I'm gonna go. Curtis Mayfield.
Oh, damn, that's versatile.
But I could name so many. You know my catalog is
the
deep.
Catalog
I could have went
crazy.
I could have went a lot of different places.
The catalog is crazy.
Yeah, and I'm not really in a certain mood. It just depends on how I feel at that day, you know what I mean? It's not like game day I got to listen to this type of music or, you know, it just varies.
For a fact. So, you've been spending most of your off seasons in Indy.
Yes, sir.
You've been in the Midwest your whole life, Louisville, Chicago, Indy, but then you also had your UPenn days. Like, where is your ideal location to live? Like, when it's all said and done, you set up shop somewhere. Ideal. Now, take logistics of fatherhood and all that out of it.
Okay.
If you could live anywhere, like, what area, what region would be perfect for you?
Honestly, bro, you know me, I'm kind of chill. Like, I'm really like a homebody. I don't necessarily have to be in a huge city. I could live somewhere like North Carolina or something like that and be cool. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm kind of burnt out from the streets already, so it's just like, you know, I'm just trying to enjoy my life, man, and raise a nice family.
North Carolina probably don't got streets. Not
too much going on.
Not too much going on. That's respectable. All right, so let's go Mount Rushmore. All right, so Mount Rushmore of hoop shoes. So your
shoes.
Specific. I always do a Mount Rushmore, but I'm sick of the players. Like, let's talk about the shoes.
Not Mount brand. Rushmore of shoes. Hoop
specific make, model, and even colorway, if you want to add that in there.
I can't. I'm not gonna do colorway. That's too specific. We'll be here for a minute. I'm not gonna do colorway. Okay. For sure. Kobe 4.
Easy.
For sure. I'm gonna go. All Kyrie's.
Like any Kyrie ever.
Any Kyrie.
Bet.
I've had them all. I'm gonna go GTs.
Okay.
These, like, for me, disclaimer, this is for me, for my performance, how the shoe feels on my foot.
Bet.
XYZ.
Yep.
Man, that fourth and final is. And I've worn my fair pair of shoes on the court. I a shoe that I really like, actually. Like, I really like the Kobe 7s also.
Me too.
I think that it's not like rated as high on the Kobe list as it should be. But I like that cushion around the Achilles. It's still a low cut. I'm a low to mid. I'm not wearing no bronze or nothing like that. Shout out to Bron, but it's just not for me. So I would. I'm gonna go with those four. I like the Pumas. It's too early to put them on a Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, facts.
They don't got enough. Yeah, you know,
they're still a little
premature.
Yeah, I love the Pumas, and I love the Kobe 7s too. Like, I had the Poison Dark Frog 7s.
Okay,
those are like elite, bro. And
yeah,
I believe those are the ones that came with the different insoles. The
yeah, like, that you could pull out. Yeah, you could pull them out. Like, I had the Olympics.
Like, attack mode, and then there was like, I can't remember what they were, but it was the same time when Kanye was in the commercial too, and they had less like, the different like insoles for different performance, which I don't know if was actually like giving different performance, but it definitely made me feel cool.
Yeah, and that commercial is iconic.
Iconic. Elite.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
I know you got at least one Rick Pitino story. I gotta hear something. I gotta hear something. Wow.
I'm trying to
within a reason. I don't want you to put too much out there.
Yeah.
I'm not asking you to get on here and start snitching, but I need to hear something crazy at least.
Man. You know, I could go a lot of different directions. I'm gonna keep it light though. I could go real vulnerable and like get personal, but I'm gonna keep it light. It's not necessarily a story, but it's something that would go on. So mind you, like at the time, I don't know how old he is now, but he was at least 60 when he was coaching us. He's probably like touching 70 now, pretty close to it. We would have to weigh in if you needed to gain weight or lose weight. If you were overweight or underweight, you would have to eat or run. It got to the point he would take out his cell phones. But this was not only for like the players. This was for the coaches as well. The coaches would have to work out, get on the treadmill, all of that. Like if you were overweight, he wasn't having it. You had to go get on the treadmill, like before practice, after practice. Like they had to get in the gym as well. So I'm gonna keep it light right there, and then I'm gonna give you another short one tidbit that was just unbelievable. So we're playing a game. You know, assistant coaches like have the scouts and stuff like that.
Right.
I'm not gonna give like a specific example or like names or anything like that, but there was one time where an assistant had a specific scout. We were supposed to guard something a certain way, something of this nature. It wasn't working. He turns to this coach. He says, mind you, this is a home game. Coaches, families, wives, children are about two rows behind us. So they can hear everything. He goes, you better not say anything else to me the rest of this bleeping game. This is all your fault. Just shut up for the rest of the game. Just like straight disrespect, like in front of their families, in front of their kids. And I'm just sitting there like, yo, that's because, you know, I'm on the bench most of the time. So I'm just sitting there like, yo, this is crazy. And they just got to take it, you know, like what you going to do?
What you going to do?
What you going to do? Yeah, you know, so.
That's fried.
Yeah.
That's good times, man. I ain't gonna make you tell.
I don't want to tell too much because it get like that.
Yeah, I already know. Yeah. So you mentioned AI early in the podcast, like super AI. Who was your like childhood idol on the basketball court? Like who did you grow up wanting to be like?
Kobe. AI, Kobe. Those two guys right there. Yeah, both of those guys right there. I mean, AI kind of was not towards the latter of his career, but Kobe was more so ascending right there.
Yeah.
And AI was kind of where he was at. So, yeah, definitely Kobe. Just like that mindset, you know what I'm saying? It's unmatched, you know what I'm saying? Real, like straight savage, straight dog. It's the first time I ever seen. Like I said, like you can watch football, but you don't really like, especially back then, you don't really know the personalities of the guys.
Yeah.
There was no real social media back then. They got helmets on. You can't really see like what's going on the sidelines. Like Kobe's showing you raw emotion. You hearing everything about how he is in practice. You can tell in the interviews how serious he is, you know. Job's not done. What am I smiling for? Like,
love it.
That's me. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's where I'm at.
That's so, two word Tony. That's what it is.
Two word Tony.
I got two you on a podcast. Tone. That's crazy. Two word Tone on a podcast.
I got more than two words for
him.
Yeah.
A couple more here. What? This is a random one, but the people got to know. Do pineapples belong on pizza?
No.
Is that an appropriate thing? No.
No, it's not appropriate. And like if I'm on a date and like a girl orders that, like I might have to skedaddle. I might have to have Rello call me like we got an emergency or something. Like cause you were wild for that.
Bro, the other day, this is crazy. That's funny you said have Rello call you. So the other day I was trapped with a parent, bro, just yapping my ear off. And I had a very limited amount of time to do like a lot of things that I needed to get done. They was chatting, bro. So I texted Catherine. I said, SOS, call me.
Yeah.
She calls me, but she didn't, bro. She was like not hip to. I'm like, hey, what's up? Everything good? Like, I'm trying to start a conversation, like to let her know, like. And she was just like, "What? What do you want?"
She's I'm like, "Are you okay?"
Yeah, I'm just like, "I'm trying." On? And then I got started getting like self conscious because the parent could they hear? And I'm like,
"Yeah."
And it just failed. It failed, and I ended up wasting 30 more minutes talking to this parent. And I got home. I told Catherine, I was like, "If I ever say SOS, call me. Just know, like, get me out of a situation.
I gotta go."
Insane, dude. All right. Growing up, Chicago sports fan. I know that's a tough place to be. There was a meme about it today. It was just like the Spider-Man meme of like sad Bears fans, sad White Sox, sad Cubs fans. Like, who were your sports teams growing up? And how was that? Like, was it rough? I mean, you got to see the Cubs win one, but I don't know if you were a Cubs guy.
Yeah, I'm a Southsider.
Yeah.
So the White Sox did win a championship. I think it may have been like 04.
Okay.
Something like that. So I saw that.
Oh, actually, I remember that.
Yeah. I was never really a Bears fan, just because like they so trash, bro.
Trash.
Like
Cutler years.
Man, my quarterbacks was Rex Grossman, Kyle Orton, Jay Cutler. It was tough, you know what I'm saying? So I really was like, when McNabb was playing, I was an Eagles fan.
Mm-hmm.
From day one, and like, right hand on the Bible. If you know, you know. From day one, when Drew Bledsoe got hurt and I saw Brady come in and win the Super Bowl, I knew he was the GOAT from then. So I had from day one, J.O. So I was a Brady fan from then on out. And then as far as basketball, like I said, I wasn't really watching too much as a kid. But it was just Kobe. Like, it was always Kobe. So it was the Lakers. But it was just Kobe, really. And then, like, as I started getting older and started, like, really becoming a basketball player, it was never, like, teams. It was more so just, like, players that I liked. Players that, like, I had, like, player comps with, maybe. You know what I mean? Guys I could take something from. So.
For sure.
So, yeah.
For sure. All right. We'll end it with some rapid fire. We'll just go. These ones Q&A quick. I'll just try to fire off as many as I can. All right, so we'll go one or two word answers on these ones. All right, so this one's going to be tough.
All right.
Basketball or football?
Basketball.
Bet.
Not tough.
Gatorade or body armor?
Body armor.
Okay. Kobe's or Kyrie's?
Ooh. Kyrie's.
Ooh, okay. I like that.
Just for me on my foot.
Yep. Rod Wave or Lil Baby?
Rod Wave.
Okay. All right, we're going Detroit rappers now.
Okay.
Skilla Baby. Babyface Ray or V's?
Babyface Ray.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm coming up with these off top of the dome.
Yeah,
by the way.
I know you are.
This is insane.
Yeah.
All right. Best Jordan of all time for this drip. You know what I'm saying?
Concords, 11s.
Bet.
And Bread Force.
Brett Force?
Crazy.
Brett Force are crazy. All right, we'll go a couple more. See if I can get a few good ones. You going? Let's think here. See, I got myself tripped up. It's cool.
I know you trying to make it a little personal. Like,
I'm trying to make it personal.
Yeah, I feel
best Favorite restaurant in Indy versus your favorite restaurant in Louisville.
That's funny. In Louisville, favorite restaurant is called Indy's.
What?
Yeah, it's a little fried chicken joint in the hood. In the hood, if you don't know. Favorite restaurant in Indy. I mean, it could be like there's a franchise, but I've only had it in Indy.
Got you.
I don't know, man. I'm keeping it pretty simple when I'm in Indy. Restaurant?
Yep.
Salt.
Salt's fire.
We'll go salt. Yeah, okay. We'll go salt.
So which one, Salt or Indy's?
Salt.
But
I'm a feel better.
No, that's a fact. That's a fact. Triple double and lose, or 50 ball and or no, excuse me, triple double and win, or 50 ball and lose.
Triple double and win. I've never had a triple double, and like I would just much rather win.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, like you score 50 and lose, like I'm probably like as a teammate, I'm probably mad at you because you probably took like a lot of bad shots, like,
hella bad shots.
Yeah, like if you got 50 and we lost, something ain't right. Like you know what I mean? Yeah.
Here's another one that's been hot on social media. Win a ring. Let's say your salary is low grade, low to mid grade.
Yeah,
but you win a ring
in the league.
In the league, yeah, in the league. So we'll just say 10 mil a year, win a ring. Yeah. 50 mil a year, no ring.
For one season.
For one season, that's a good question.
Yeah, that is. That's, you know, that, like how long?
That makes a big difference.
That makes a big difference. I'm gonna have to take the 50.
Take the 50. Yeah, you get a ring a couple years later.
Yeah.
Get you a ring a couple years later. I ain't mad at you.
Yeah.
All right, last one here. Best holiday.
Journey's birthday.
Oh, damn, that's a good-ass answer.
Yeah, and that's like, good-ass I'm answer. Coming home every time.
Shoot. I was hoping right to get you I was hoping to get you tripped up on that because it's holiday time. You got Thanksgiving coming up, Christmas around the corner.
Man, I mean, it ain't been no Thanksgiving for me for some time now. You know what I'm saying? So
that's a fact.
Christmas is a great holiday, obviously. Not too big on the 4th, like it's cool, but more of a Juneteenth guy.
big Juneteenth guy. I rocks with that. I'm big celebratory day for sure.
So yeah, I'm gonna have to go with the little one's birthday. She gonna be 7 this year. It's crazy.
That's dope, man. That's awesome. So. I was hoping to get you tripped up, but you went out on a super high note, pulling on the heartstrings on that one. So appreciate you jumping on here with me, man. I know it's damn near midnight there, so I'm going to let you get to bed. Before I let you go, tell the people where they can find you and what your social medias are.
For sure. I'm on TikTok, but I'm not on TikTok for real. I'm not on there. So I'm going to just shout out the IG handle, 101 Tone, number one, Tone, T-O-N-E. I'm on there. I'm pretty active. You know what I'm saying? Got a nice little catalog.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see that versatility on the music side that we was talking about. So rock with me. You know. JL know where to contact me though, for real.
My guy, bro. I appreciate you jumping on here, man. Looking forward to continue to watch you this season, bro. And super proud of you always. So keep it up.
Yeah, appreciate it. You know, just wishing for health, you know what I'm saying? the consistency is going to be there. Just got to be healthy, you know what I'm saying? So
yes, sir.
And hopefully having a great summer.
Yes, sir. I'll talk to you soon, bro.
All right, appreciate it.
And that was another episode of the Gym Sessions Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you guys could do me a favor before you go, before you close the app, whatever you're listening to this on, give us a great review. Give us all the stars, the best rating, whatever you got to do. That will help me grow the show. So whether it's Spotify, YouTube, Apple Podcasts, whatever platform you're using, if you guys could leave us some feedback, great rating, great reviews, all that, so that we can continue to grow, continue to kind of play the algorithm game on all these apps, and it will help get the podcast in front of more listeners so that we can get on more great guests like Tony and some of the other guests that we've had on this season. So once again, I appreciate your support, always tuning in. Super grateful to have you as a listener, and I'm looking forward to the rest of season 2. So we'll see you guys back with another episode next week. Thank you.